The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
We've seen it before. We saw it in Dayton, Ohio. And so when we heard it was going to be in Louisville, we came back.
I was on the edge of my seat the whole time. I really was. It's just delightful.
Wonderful. Everybody should come and see it.
I loved it. And just seeing our young people doing this, it was worth every damn. It really is. I love every moment of it, sir.
Everybody should see this.
These kids are multiple threats, right? Like, they sing, they dance, they play instruments. It was amazing.
I'm so surprised they're from Oklahoma. It's like, wait a minute, this is an Irish... Anyway, so it was fabulous. I had a wonderful time. A lot of energy.
Loved it from start to finish. It was so effervescent. And my husband told me to take pictures throughout the show, and I just didn't remember to take my camera out because I was mesmerized.
Oh, I thought it was fantastic. Oh, so much energy. Dancers were awesome. The singing, incredible. The patriotism, oh. A few tears. Yeah, it was good.
I was so thankful to come out here. I was having a really bad day, and I came out, and it was just beautiful, and it brightened my day.
Oh, we loved it. So we're with the McClanahan and School of Irish Dance, and it was amazing. And we've got friends in Oklahoma, and I'm literally going to text them because I hear you guys are going to be out there and see if we can get them to come see you guys.
One of the dancers said they're going to be in Nashville on Sunday. So if this gets, you know, podcast, like, go and see it. Like, it's totally worth it. It's amazing.
Beyond expectations.
It was wonderful. I think it was one of the best shows I've ever seen. I've even seen Riverdance, and I thought it was as good or better.
There you go. Some more incredible feedback from audience members viewing Celtic Throne for the first time. They had a performance Thursday night in Louisville, Kentucky. And, of course, the next one is Sunday night, July 2nd, Sunday night in the Ryman Theater in Nashville, Tennessee. So if you're anywhere around Nashville and you've even to go and visit the theater is worth the trip. But to visit the theater and to see Celtic Throne, you have that opportunity if you go to CelticThrone.com. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining us on this final show of the week. You can get to the live video stream of this show at TrumpetDaily.com, and you can also visit our website, or rather our channel, at Rumble. Just go to Rumble and search for The Trumpet Daily. I think if you just do Rumble and then / Trumpet Daily, it'll take you right to our channel. So you can get the live streams at the Rumble channel and at our website. And, of course, at both sites, you can also view on demand and see some of the old programs. It's great, as I've said this week, to see a little bit more action on Rumble. We had the one day where our stream went down, so everybody jumped over to the Rumble channel, many of them for the first time, so they got to see the live chat that goes on there and leave some extra comments, which was fun. I wanted to lead, well, first of all, full disclosure, there weren't that many clips that were interesting to me this morning, so I thought, well, the final show of the week, let's just lead off with the feedback from Celtic Throne. What an uplifting, as always, an uplifting, inspiring message. And what a contrast. Here we are, we're coming to the end of June. Finally, not that you want to get out of June, but, you know, the Pride movement, the LGBT movement, they've got, as I said earlier this week, they've got an entire month. I saw a tweet the other day saying that we should make July, you know, the American Independence Month. I don't think that's probably going to get as much traction with the communists. We're coming up to July 4th, the celebration of American independence. You would think if any holiday would get a full month or maybe a week, it would be that. But no, no. We reserve that for the LGBTQ movement. That's where we've got to really be filled with pride. We've got to fly the rainbow flag right next to Old Glory, right next to the Stars and Bars. And this is where we are today in our Sodom and Gomorrah society. If you think about the contrast between Celtic Throne, that show that has so much hope, I mean, it has this sweeping coverage, really, of a number of prophecies. It's subtle. I mean, it's not just in your face. It's not a, you know, in your face religious message. It's beautiful music. It's beautiful singing and dance. There's patriotism throughout. And by the way, if you want to go and celebrate our nation's independence, right around July 4th, the July 2nd performance at Nashville, that would be a perfect time to do just that. There's the beautiful, beautiful American medley in the middle of the show, which always, I mean, you go into the show, I think a lot of people are sort of taken aback by the production, the quality, the professionalism right at the outset, because it's, for the most part, it's a family production. As the one lady said, I'm surprised you're all from Oklahoma. Where are the Irish roots in Oklahoma? But they go, and so many of the people who comment on the fact that I can't believe this is a family show, that this is a family production. You've got moms working backstage to help them with, you know, changing their costuming and all that sort of thing, and to direct the young children. Some of them are just 5 and 6 years of age. And then you've got young people working on the sound as well, and the special effects, the lighting. And you've got all these people related too. Lots of them are cousins with other performers. Some of them are in the show with two or three other siblings. What a contrast to Pride Month, to what's being celebrated all through the month of June. The upside down world of today. Anything but traditional. No, I mean, no husband, wife, and children. I mean, that's so 1950s. We've got to celebrate the sexual deviance. We've got to celebrate the bizarre. We've got to celebrate the perverse. You've got people flashing themselves in the Toronto parade, naked in front of children. You've got the ones in New York chanting, "We're here, we're queer, we're coming after your children," of all things. And then you've got the naked bikers in Seattle. Well, where do we go from here? How much worse is this going to get? Well, even as you see this all around you, you see God's church celebrating the family as God designed it, as God created it, as God instituted it from the very beginning. Read Genesis 2. God's the one who ordained marriage. You know, Herbert Armstrong in his old booklet, Why Marriage? Soon Obsolete? He got that right. I've got a story here a little bit later saying how many 40-year-olds have never been married. So many people, even if they're not, you know, the bikers in Seattle or in the chant with those in the parade in New York City, even if they are more normal, so to speak, so many of them are not marrying, and they're not building a family. They're not having children. How sad and tragic is this development? Herbert Armstrong was right. Why marriage? Soon obsolete? Is it about to just disappear in the traditional sense? Well, he was right. He was right. We've got a brochure that goes by that name. He was right about the family breakdown. Now, he talks more about the family breakdown and the missing dimension in sex. In either case, if you want this brochure or if you want the missing dimension in sex, just call our 800 number there. If you live in the United States, Canada, the Caribbean, 1-866-930-3024, and request the missing dimension in sex. Or the Why Marriage booklet. We also won that during 6 years of litigation back in the late 90s, early 2000s. Why marriage? In that booklet, Mr. Armstrong talks about how that God instituted this union. God's the one who made us male and female from the very beginning. And if God didn't create marriage, the institution of marriage, who did? At what point along the way in human civilization did someone come up with the big idea? You know what? We should marry. Well, it's right there in Genesis 2. And you know, Jesus, during his ministry, he talked about events in Genesis. He didn't just cast them aside as fables or as stories that human beings told or lied about. He believed. He said, as in the days of Noah, it's going to be just like it in the last days. Well, the days of Noah, that's covered in Genesis 6. Do you think Jesus Christ looked at that account and then the flood that came because of universal sin and rebellion and then just sort of thought, well, you know, it never really happened. But it's a nice story nonetheless. Jesus believed. Jesus was the God of the Old Testament when all of those events were unfolding. It's going to be just like it was before the flood of Noah's day. This is respecting storytelling with drag queens. It's a Canadian website here. It says, the storytelling with drag queens foundation is grateful for the funding that we receive from the Canada Arts Council. This funding allows us to continue to do shows that encourage diversity and inclusion in literacy in a fun and educational way to schools, community centers, and library. The key takeaway here is that they receive funding from the Canadian government. It's sanctioned by the government of Canada. And this is the way the communists think here in the United States as well. Same in the UK. Hey, let's fund this sort of perversion. Why not? I mean, we want diversity and we want equality, except when it comes to accepting people into universities. There we want affirmative action. Notice how their heads are just exploding over the Supreme Court ruling yesterday. 6-3. Yeah, affirmative action it's actually racist, say the justices. But then you've got all the usual suspects out there saying, oh, no, we have got to have affirmative action because we need to fill schools with minorities, even if they haven't qualified. It's no longer about your character or merit. It's just about the color of your skin. So they say, on the one hand, they say, hey, we've got to have equality. On the other hand, they say, no equality. Just put the minorities in there, whether they deserve it or not. How dare the Supreme Court, how dare Clarence Thomas rule against affirmative action? I forget which clip that is, but if you can find the the montage on the affirmative action one, I think it's number 2.
You know, I fear what will happen and what... Will there be many lawyers who look like Charles and I in the future, or doctors, or accountants? It is a problem. Clarence Thomas, you know, he has criticized affirmative action. That's one of the reasons why he graduated from Yale, and we know that's one of the reasons why he's on the Supreme Court.
The worst thing about affirmative action is that it created a Clarence Thomas who benefited from the program and now is in a position where he's going to deny many young African-American talented individuals an opportunity.
This is tantamount to sticking a dagger in our back.
A dagger? Really? This is from Richard Palmer's trumpet brief earlier today. The court voted 6-3 that affirmative action is racist. This came after a group of very well-qualified Asian students were rejected from Harvard. Had they been just about any other race, they would have been accepted. Notice the ones rejected were Asian. Never mind the Asian community or the Asian minority in the United States. You listen to Al Sharpton, and the only race that matters is the black race. These Asians were denied, even though they had near perfect marks, near perfect qualifications. It says here, but Harvard had already filled its quota. Just as Clarence Thomas attacked the thinking behind affirmative action, that certain races need to be given a leg up because of historical disadvantages, saying that such a view is irrational, it is an insult to individual achievement and cancerous to young minds seeking to push through barriers rather than consign themselves to permanent victimhood. Seems like common sense to me, coming from Justice Thomas. But oh no, not to the Reverend Al. The Obamas, of course, were quick to respond. As always, when it comes to race, you can be sure that Michelle and Barack are going to have something to say instantly. They don't like Tim Scott talking about how that, you know, there's opportunity in the United States. No, no, there's no opportunity, not for minorities, say the Obamas. They don't like it when Clarence Thomas speaks out and says, this is racist. Michelle Obama, she says, back in college, I was one of the few black students on my campus, and I was proud of getting into such a respected school. I knew I'd worked hard for it, but still, I sometimes wondered if people thought I got there because of affirmative action. It was a shadow that students like me couldn't shake, whether those doubts came from the outside or inside, our own minds. But the fact is, I belonged. Of course, students on my campus and countless others across the country were and continue to be granted special consideration for admissions. Some have parents who graduated from the same school. Others have families who can afford coaches to help them run faster or hit a ball harder. Others go to high school. I mean, she talks about how that she had a bit of an inferiority complex because of affirmative action. But then goes on and says that, well, it's necessary. It's needed today. Here's what Barack Hussein Obama said. Affirmative action was never a complete answer in the drive towards a more just society. But for generations of students who had been systematically excluded from most of America's key institutions, it gave us the chance to show we more than deserved a seat at the table. See, they've been excluded. They've been cheated. They're a victim of institutional racism, and so we've just got to open the doors for them, even if they're not qualified. Even if their marks are terrible, how does that help someone in their future? Send them off to Harvard where they fail because they haven't been prepared academically. So some sense, some good common sense coming down from the court. It's too bad that they didn't have it with respect to election integrity earlier in the week. But with respect to this and the student loan program, you know, Joe Obama wanted to just waive the loans. I think the Supreme Court ruled earlier today. They struck that down pretty emphatically. So some decent rulings coming in from the Supremes. But coming back to our Sodom and Gomorrah society and world, if you think about the pride marches that went on in Toronto, in New York City, in Portland, and here's where we are in 2023. I mean, how much worse is it going to get? You flash yourself, and just 2 seconds ago, you flash yourself in front of a child at a park, then you're off to jail, and you should be. But now, I guess, as long as you're in a pride parade, you can just waltz down the road naked. It doesn't matter how many children are out on the streets. Toronto, for its part, it's got a new mayor coming in. Her name's Olivia Chow. It says here on Global News, Chow's main mentor is Marshall Gantz, a famous community organizer who rose to fame in the United Farm Workers of America. Gantz worked with prominent community organizers or radical communists and was trained by Saul Alinsky. Well, there you go. In so many of these cities, this is what the people want. They want communist leadership. They're getting it, to be sure. And these people are coming in. The communists make no bones about it. I mean, they want to destroy the family. This is their objective. They just want everyone dependent on the nanny state, on big government. I've given you this quote a number of times in the last few weeks. Herbert Armstrong, this is again from The Missing Dimension in Sex. The foundational bulwark of any healthy, stable, and permanent society is the family unit. That's the foundation. So what happens when the foundation crumbles? It says a solid family structure is the very foundation of a stable and enduring society. So what does it tell you when you look around our society and you see so much instability? And you see so much division and strife. The Supreme Court makes a ruling and you've got the talking heads immediately rushing to the cameras saying that we've been stabbed in the back. And of course, the dear leader, Barack Obama, he's leading the way. Anything and everything he can do to stir up racial division and strife, to stir up hatred. This is that article I mentioned, the Washington Times. It says a record number of U.S. 40-year-olds have never married, and most live alone, according to a new analysis of the Census Bureau data. The Pew Research Center reported Wednesday that 25% of 40-year-olds in 2021 had never been married, up from 20% in 2010. I mean, it's just going higher. Why don't people want to marry and to start a family? I played that clip from Tucker from, I think it was last summer, where his advice to young people was to marry. Don't overthink it. I mean, choose wisely, but don't overthink it. And then have more children than you can afford. Who gives that kind of advice today? 25% says here the trend is notable because the share of 40-year-olds who had completed at least a bachelor's degree was much higher in 2021 than in 1980, 39% to 18%. The report comes as U.S. birth rates and marriage rates have declined for decades, weakening the traditional connection between marriage and childbirth. It's been declining for decades. How is it that the more and more educated, and I'll put that in scare quotes, but how is it the more and more educated we become, the less and less inclined we are to marry and to build a family in the traditional sense, the way God defines it in Scripture? Total breakdown in our society. How much does this world need the family of God? Look at what it says in Revelation 19 and verse 7. Let us be glad and rejoice. Let us be glad and rejoice and give honor to him, for the marriage of the Lamb is come, and his wife has made herself ready. The Lamb, of course, refers to Jesus Christ. Who is the wife? Who is the bride? Well, you can go over at Ephesians 5 and see that Christ is talking about Jesus Christ marrying the church of God, the true church of God. And she's making herself ready. She's preparing for that marriage. This is from my father's booklet, John's Gospel, The Love of God. It says, we were born to achieve this future. This is the greatest marriage there ever will be for all time in all the universe. This is an epic event that will never be duplicated. Unless you have this vision in your mind, you will be susceptible to falling away. It says, unless you see that marriage, you won't be ready. You won't be ready for it unless it's vividly in your mind. Like I said, read the last half of Ephesians 5. Read these few verses here in Revelation 19. And there's many more like them. Verse 8 says, and to her, that's the wife, the bride, was granted that she should be arrayed in fine linen, clean and white, for the fine linen is the righteousness of the saints. See, this is the cause of all of our problems today. Transgression, I mean. Not this, not the righteousness of the saints. It's the fact that we don't have it. We don't have righteousness. We have a lot of transgression. Daniel 8 says the transgressors have come to the full. It's just we're surrounded by sin. It's a sin-drenched society. And God says that's the cause. If you want to talk about root causes of all of our problems, of all of these evils, these curses that are all around us, it always gets back to sin. You always have to come back to the sin question. What is sin? 1 John 3:4 says sin is the transgression of God's law. We have rejected God's law in the spiritual sense for sure. And here in the national sense, we've rejected the supreme law of the land. We've just shredded our Constitution. People talk about it, but there's no supreme law. We're seeing every day a two-tiered system of justice. One where they'll go after grandma for taking a selfie in a public building, put her in jail, and yet let Hunter run free. All the prostitution rings, all of the illegal narcotics, the drug taking, the illegal firearms, the pay to play, receiving wire transfers. Jim Comer says it's up to like $40 million now. Receiving $40 million from foreign adversaries in order to change U.S. policy? That's treason. Comer says it borders on treason. It is treason. Let's just cut to the chase. Of course it's treason. These are traitors running the show. Amid all the other problems we see in our country, you've got traitors in the White House. You've got that traitor Barack Hussein Obama doing everything he can to fundamentally transform the United States, to turn it into a communist state. Coming back to the need for God's family to solve these problems, Mr. Armstrong wrote this. He said, "The kingdom of God starts with a family relationship. First, the physical human families. Second, the one compacted together church. And then finally, when the church is changed to immortality, the God family, which is the kingdom of God." Jesus came into Galilee at the start of his ministry, preaching the gospel. Gospel means good news. Preaching the gospel of the soon coming kingdom of God. And the kingdom of God is God's family administering his government. That government, of course, being based on the holy and pure law of God. Romans 7:12, read it. Read it. People want to dismiss the law of God. People want to say the law of God is out the window. It's outdated. It's so Old Testament. Well, why did Paul say what he said in Romans 7 and verse 12? You've got to read it on your own time. There's other verses in the Bible that talk about this present world that we're in. Paul, in particular, described it as the present evil world. And I told you what Jesus said with respect to our world today as it compares to the world before the flood. Let's just look at some of that. This is Genesis 6 and verse 5. It says, "God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually." I mean, this is just after chapter 6 of the first book of the Bible. Every thought, every imagination, it's on evil continually. And because of universal sin, Peter brings this out in his epistles, because of rampant and universal sin, God had to intervene to end the suffering. Now, those people will have an opportunity to live God's way when they're brought up in the second resurrection. You can read more about that in Ezekiel 38, 39, the Valley of the Dry Bones and so on. Revelation 20, verse 11 here in Genesis 6, it says, "The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth." I mean, corrupt over and over again. It was just filled with violence. That's what we're seeing in our cities. It's just filled with it. This is from the Washington Post, June 29. It says, "More than 238,000 people died in global conflict last year, according to a new study released Tuesday, marking a massive 96% increase year over year in deaths related to conflicts." 96% increase. It says the startling figure found in the Institute for Economics and Peace's annual Global Peace Index reflects in particular the impact of two highly deadly wars in Ethiopia and Ukraine. I mean, this is just death resulting from conflict, from war. But what about just crime in big cities all over the world? It says here, this rapid surge in deaths in 2022 related to state-based conflict. Ultimately, what we most often talk about when we talk about global war suggests a big change in the global picture of violence and a move away from the era of terrorism and non-state violence, which was terrifying in its own way, but often smaller in scale. 238,000 people slaughtered, 250,000 people just last year because of global conflict. And all that it takes is one little spark, and it sets off a firestorm of violence. There was an incident in France. This 17-year-old fatally shot during, I think, a traffic stop. So France now has its George Floyd moment. And it's exploding in violence and burning because of it. This is from Eurointelligence. It says the scene was captured on video by an amateur disproving the official account from the policeman involved who claimed he had been in danger. The video went viral on social media, triggering national outrage and two nights of violent clashes with police in various parts of the country. Police tactics in poor ethnic neighborhoods are once again a focus of politics. See, one incident, and then it explodes into violence all across the country. The law enforcement is losing control. And look at the contribution that social media makes to this. I mean, I suppose you could say, well, it's exposing injustices, crimes. But look at the reaction. I mean, people are just emotionally unhinged. They see one thing on social media, and of course, 15 years ago or so, whenever it came about, Facebook and Twitter and all these things, we thought, oh, this is great. What a way to connect the human race, to bring us all together. Look at how these mediums are being used to incite mob behavior, rioting, burning, looting. This is happening in France. And of course, just like we've experienced here in America, you've got all the celebrities hopping on, declaring their outrage. I mean, they're really upset. And so that just stirs up more animosity and hatred. It says here, after two nights of rioting, the government is changing tone once again as the destructive spiral is set to get worse. Influencers on social media agitate. It says violence and counter-violence goes in circles, which is hard to break. Then it all becomes a question of proportion. How far will riots go this time? And how much will it agitate the police forces to look after their own safety? There is no happy ending to this. That's from Eurointelligence. There's no happy ending. It's just going to get worse. They're right about that. Verse 13 here in Genesis 6. It says, "And God said to Noah, 'The end of all flesh is come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth.'" It's just filled with violence. And what did Jesus say? This is Luke 17, verse 26. "And as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be also in the days of the Son of Man." I mean, in other words, just right before the return of Jesus Christ, there's going to be an explosion of violence. There's going to be evil, people thinking about evil continually, just nonstop. That's how Christ described this society, our society in these last days. When we come back, we'll finish off today's program with a few more news items. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the show, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. You can also get to our programs at our Rumble channel. That's The Trumpet Daily. Just go to Rumble and search for The Trumpet Daily, and you can watch the live stream of this show every weekday morning at 11 a.m. in the central time zone of the United States. And you can also watch older programs on demand as well. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
A child is a miraculous blessing from God, an opportunity to build his family. In his word, God says to train them up in the way that they should go, so that when they are old, they will not depart from it. But how should you train up your child? Most parents do not know. Most parenting books offer only limited help because their authors do not understand the purpose and potential of your child's mind. As a result, millions of children grow up to be hopeless without any direction in life. Many come from broken homes. Many do not have a home. This is why so many young people become delinquent, rebellious, and unsuccessful as teenagers and adults. But you can rear successful, jubilant children and avoid the heartache of an unhappy and miserable home. God has outlined how to rear obedient children in His Word. Our free book, Child Rearing with Vision, will show you how to raise children that follow after God's abundant way of life. It will help you build a strong, united family. It will help you bring God's love into your child rearing, and it will guide you through the momentous journey of preparing your child to serve God the Father forever. Request your free copy of Child Rearing with Vision at our website, thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
Russia is using China as an intermediary to buy large quantities of technology from the West while evading heavy Western sanctions and export controls, Newsweek reported on June 21st. Russia is using this technology to continue fighting its war against Ukraine. U.S. companies were the source of 66% of imported critical components found in weapons Russia has used in Ukraine. Most of these components were initially sold to China. By using China and other nations as middlemen to evade sanctions, Russia has bought technology manufactured by 155 companies headquartered in America and Europe. China is actively helping Russia to get around Western sanctions, undermining the West's efforts to punish Russia for the Ukraine war. The increasingly close relationship between Russia and China is a trend the Trumpet has watched for decades. To understand more about this subject, read our Trends article, Why the Trumpet Watches Russia Allying with China. The Israel Defense Forces, or IDF, killed a terrorist cell in a rare drone attack in the West Bank last Wednesday. An IDF spokesperson stated that the terrorist group appeared to be a mix of Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad terrorists. This was the first drone strike carried out in the region by the Israeli military since 2006. It occurred just days after Israel used helicopters to evacuate IDF soldiers from the West Bank after Palestinian gunmen opened fire and launched explosives. This was the first time the IDF has used aircraft in the West Bank since the early 2000s. The Israeli military using air power twice in 1 week, after not doing so for roughly 20 years, suggests this jump in force will become more common. The West Bank border is a strategic location in Israel's conflict with Iran. As part of Iran's goal to blot out the name of Israel, it prioritizes arming Palestinian groups. The growing presence of these Islamist extremists in the West Bank shows that Iran is moving into the area and toward its ultimate goal of controlling Jerusalem. To understand what Bible prophecy reveals about the future of Jerusalem, read Iran Conquered Lebanon, Now What? Germany plans to permanently deploy 4,000 soldiers in NATO ally Lithuania, German Defense Minister Boris Pistorius announced on Monday. Following Russia's invasion of Ukraine over a year ago, Lithuania has repeatedly asked Berlin to send defensive troops to the country, which borders Russian enclave Kaliningrad. Since June 2022, Germany has pledged to defend Lithuania in the event of invasion, but it would not agree to station soldiers abroad until now. This deployment will be a massive addition to Germany's military presence in Lithuania. Germany already leads a multinational NATO brigade of roughly 1,600 soldiers in Lithuania, 780 of which are from the German army. Russian aggression is giving Germany an excellent reason to increase its military presence in threatened countries like Lithuania. The Trumpet has warned for decades that Germany's military will expand. To understand the true dangers posed to the world by increasing German and European militarism, read our Trends article, Why the Trumpet Watches Europe's Push Toward a Unified Military. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.
What I think the Constitution says, we hold these truths to be self, that all men and women are created equal, endowed by their creator. I just think it's, this is not your father's Republican Party. What I meant by that is it's done more to unravel basic rights and basic decisions than any court in recent history. And that's what I meant by it, not normal. It's gone out of its way to, look, I made a commitment that I would not in any way interfere with the Justice Department, who they prosecuted, if they prosecuted, how they proceeded. I've not spoken once Not one single time with the Attorney General on any specific case. Not once. There's still a lot of really good Republicans.
Out in the country.
No, yes. And in the Senate.
Who?
Oh, I think Mitt Romney's the first guy. There's a lot of them, but that's too. Right.
Mr. President, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate
it's great
it.
To have you. It's
thank
great
you.
To have
thank
you. Thank you. Don't go anywhere. It's a very exciting day around here. We'll have reaction and analysis to everything we just heard.
I'm going to say, though, a little concerned. The New York Post, which they have on the cover, don't look it up, they have on the cover of online, like, Joe Biden walking off set, right?
Yeah.
But they act like Biden was confused. No, he's president of the United States. He said, thank you. And I'm going to leave now. People do that to us all the time. I mean, I get it. He says God save the queen. He confuses Iraq and Ukraine. I get all of that stuff. But some of this stuff is just ridiculous.
When the president left the studio from Nicole, he came and met with me for about 10 or 15 minutes. He probably was looking for where his meetings were going to be when he was leaving.
Yeah.
He was not stumbling around. Oh. The Secret Service was directing him. I think Alex has a picture of him and I meeting here. So he wasn't lost.
Right.
I think the Post was lost.
Yeah, no, he wasn't lost at all. I mean, you could see again him in a hurry to get out of the chair and get out and meet somebody really important. And we all know that person, Rev, was you.
Right. He wandered off the live set because he was so eager to see Reverend Al Sharpton. Got it. Here again, wandering aimlessly, just like the country. Just like the country is. And then the regime media covering for it. No problem. This is from Victor Davis Hanson at American Greatness. It says, the American post-Cold War order from the Ronald Reagan through George W. Bush administration is over. It says, Barack Obama began its erosion with his tired lectures about the past sins of the United States. He was supposed to come in as the great uniter, Barack Obama. But look at what he did. He came in right away and started apologizing to the world for all of America's sins and then telling us here at home, you're racist. You're racist through and through. I was going to wait on these crazy headlines to conclude with something a little bit lighter. This is from CTV in Canada. Smoke from Canada wildfires is increasing health risks to in black and poorer U.S. communities. How does race enter into that subject? The smoke? Is the smoke racist as well? Is the smoke targeting minority communities? I saw a clip this morning, a guy talking about Social Security and how that it benefits white people more because they tend to live longer than black people. So I guess Social Security is racist as well. What, at this point, what is not racist? VDH says, Barack Obama began its erosion with his tired lectures about the past sins of the United States. It's just over. They just recycle it over and over and over again. What a depressing and negative message. What a depressing and negative agenda. I guess this is how they hope to win in the next election cycle. No wonder they need to cheat so much. How does this message appeal to people, even minority communities? There's lots of minorities, by the way, who are quite happy with the Supreme Court's ruling yesterday on affirmative action, but you'd never know it listening to Al Sharpton. VDH says, Obama empowered radical Islamists. He invited Russia back into the Middle East after a 40-year hiatus. He snored while Vladimir Putin swallowed large areas of Ukraine. He nonchalantly allowed ISIS almost to take over Iraq, and he authored the Libyan misadventure. It says Joe Biden has greatly amplified what Obama inaugurated. He accentuates the Obama-authored foreign policy disasters by his own family corruption. It's made worse. Because Biden's in there. I mean, he's receiving payments from foreign nationals, from foreign adversaries, and altering or modifying U.S. policy because of it. Pay to play. Listen to Rob Schmidt from Newsmax, clip 6.
House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer revealing overseas payments to the Bidens
could exceed $40 million, alleging that money was paid for six different policy decisions. Four of those decisions made while Joe Biden allegedly was vice president of the United States. We're moving into what could be considered traitorous territory with this, especially if we're talking about countries that are adversarial to this nation. The Oversight Committee also uncovering new banking statements and suspicious activity reports that show more bank accounts, shell companies, and even more Biden family members involved in this obvious influence peddling scheme.
It's so obvious, and we're not moving into traitorous territory. We're there. We're there. The traitors are in control. The communists have infiltrated Washington, D.C., the U.S. government. This booklet, I held it up earlier, he was right. There's an entire chapter in here on the prophesied communist infiltration of the United States of America. Herbert Armstrong was talking about this, if you can believe it, as early as the 1940s and 50s. All the quotes are in here. You can call that 800 number at the bottom of your screen, 1-866-930-3024, or visit our website, thetrumpet.com. You can download He Was Right from the website. There's no cost, no obligation to any of this literature. I mean, even the print versions, we'll send it out to your mailbox. We just need to know the mailing address. That's it. No cost, no obligation. He was right. This is from Victor Davis Hanson. It says, if the U.S. had an honest media, a disinterested Department of Justice, in other words, a Department of Justice that is blind to political parties, and a professional FBI, the Biden family would likely be facing felony bribery charges and an impeachment vote for leveraging the interests of the U.S. for a few millions of Ukrainian and Chinese cash. How is it that during the first two terms of Barack Obama, he just turns a blind eye to Russia's advances on Ukraine? But now this, the third term of Obama, it's pump $100 billion into Ukraine. I mean, after all, the Bidens have all these interests in Ukraine. They've had these dealings with the Ukrainian oligarchs going on for years. Listen to this from Jim Comer. I think it was on that same show at Newsmax yesterday, clip 7.
The thing that stands out in my mind is one of the first acts Joe Biden made as President of the United States is he canceled a thing called the China Initiative. And what that was the FBI had this investigation ongoing since the Obama administration at the request of university presidents all over America who were complaining that these Chinese students who were coming to the United States legally, who were paying full tuition, but they were stealing our intellectual property, stealing our research and development, and sending it back to China. They knew this. It was an elaborate spy ring. The university presidents wanted the FBI to try to crack down on it and end it. And one of the first things Joe Biden did was he ended it, and he said it was on the basis of racial profiling and discrimination. And the only person that benefited from that, the only country would be the Chinese Communist Party, because this is their way of not having to invest in research and development, and one way they stole our intellectual property from the universities. Even the most liberal Ivy League university presidents wanted something done about the theft taking place at our universities, but Joe Biden canceled it at the request of China.
And he receives millions through wire transfers from China. I mean, this is amazing, really, when you think about all that they said. Again, what they project onto you, the opponent, is exactly what they're guilty of. When Donald Trump, when he won the Republican nomination back in 2016, and some of the policies on the RNC platform were modified or updated, tweaked, as they always are, every four-year cycle, the Democrats were just scouring through all of that content and seeing that, well, hey, this suggests that he's going to be more favorable to Russia, to Vladimir Putin's Russia. So he must be on the take. Putin must be bribing Trump. They were convinced of this. You know, I'm old enough to remember that in the news cycle. Well, you've heard it even more recently. He's a Russian stooge. He's a Russian agent. And here's the Biden crime family doing the bidding of the CCP, the communist Chinese, taking cash from China, coming in and canceling the China initiative. All these Chinese nationals coming to the U.S., stealing our technology, sending it back home. University officials knew it all across the country. They were asking for the federal government to do something about it, crack down on this. And the big guy gets in there and immediately puts an end to the investigation, just like they did with Hunter, just like Bill Barr did with Hunter. Okay, listen, I've got the laptop. I see all of the evidence of crime, but we're just going to sit on this, said Bill Barr. We're just going to cover this up, and we're just going to cover up the election steal, and then I'll spend the rest of my life in retirement talking about how bad the orange man is. Victor Davis Hanson, he says here, Biden has fortified any moral credibility America once had in sermonizing to the world about the advantages of transparent democracy. Instead, Washington under Biden went full third world. His family got rich from his offices, and Joe Biden warped government agencies in efforts to take out his next possible presidential rival. The net result, the Obama-Biden continuum, has been the moral and material collapse of U.S. foreign policy, the moral and material collapse of America abroad. And of course, as I covered in the first segment, I mean, you're seeing the moral and material collapse of America here at home as well. One last bit here from Kim Strassel at the Wall Street Journal. It says, expect much more obfuscation from Mr. Garland's defenders and the Justice Department itself, but don't be taken in. There are only two relevant questions here, both of which will have documented answers. First, is it true that the president's appointed attorneys refused to bring charges against the president's son in their districts, defying a team that had spent years building a case? Did that happen? There's going to be a trail of evidence to prove it one way or the other. I mean, so much of that evidence is already coming to the surface. Second, was Mr. Weiss ever given formal authority to bring those charges on his own? Did he have authority, as Merrick Garland said that he did? Because you've got six witnesses, according to Shapley, the whistleblower, who say that we heard Weiss say himself that he didn't have final say, that the decision was going to be made from higher up. That takes you to Garland. That takes you to Biden. That takes you to the dear leader, Barack Hussein Obama. Says this second question about Weiss's authority. U.S. attorneys can't file charges wherever they please. They have jurisdictions. It says Mr. Garland's claim that Mr. Weiss had even more authority than a special counsel with the ability to file in any district is bizarre unless Mr. Weiss was formally given such power. See, usually there is a chain of command. Usually they do have to run things by the higher-ups. But Garland, who's a bad liar, he came out and said he could have filed charges anywhere. He had total authority. And then he reaches that sweetheart of a deal for Hunter and company. A plea bargain. A couple of tax crimes that we can kind of brush aside as misdemeanors. And then the gun charge, which is a felony, but we can also brush that aside as well. And his record can be squeaky clean. Hunter Biden. Unbelievable. Two-tiered standard of justice. Well, that's all that we have time for, unfortunately, on today's show. If you'd like to email the program, td@thetrumpet.com. Don't forget to visit CelticThrone.com so that you can attend the performance on Sunday night in Nashville at the Ryman Theater. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us all week, and we'll see you next time.